Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, asher bachar banu mikol hamim, v'na'atan lanu et torato, Baruch atah Adonai, notein ha-Torah. I'm going to wait until Susan comes in. Hello, Carol. How are you? I'm going to wait until Susan comes back in. Oh, yes. If you don't want to touch things that people are touching and passing around, you can just leave your $5 at your place and I'll collect it afterwards.
Oh, I see.
So feel free to do whatever you want. The dinner? Yes, the dinner's canceled.
Yes. The money's probably more germy than we are.
That's probably true.
Going to the supermarket and handling the produce and right.
Yeah, you know what? We're not going to keep talking about it though now.
Because so
yes, we're gonna focus on the Parsha and all of that. So we need a break. Purim was a nice break. So one of the things we know that has been proven is that a positive, optimistic attitude impacts our immune system. When we were in Israel last year on the women's trip, we went to the Technion Medical School and met with researchers there who are not anecdotal information, but clinical information about the impact of positive attitude, positive talk, optimism, the whole thing, and how it impacts our immune system. So we need a break. And so we're going to focus on, oh, Carol, can you do that? Oh, you're very limber. I'm very impressed.
Oh.
It's crawled under that table. So
is your Israel trip?
Oh, it is on hold right now. So we're not sure. We're holding. There's no reason to cancel now because we don't have, nothing happened. So we're on hold for that.
You go to Israel now, you're in quarantine.
Yes, okay, but we're not going to talk about that now because we're talking about the Parshas.
Her trip is
okay, ladies, we're not going to talk about this. We're going to make one announcement and then we're going to focus on the Parsha. For anyone who doesn't feel comfortable coming to class, I totally understand, and we're going to follow the guidelines from the medical scientist people here in Colorado for now. Things could change, and we're open to that. The class is recorded, and it will be uploaded on my website, and I try to do it by the late afternoon on Thursday, so you are welcome. The website, so I'll give that to you, is torahchai.net, TORAHCHAI.net. Torahchai.com is messianic, so don't go there. Come to me, and the class will be uploaded for anybody who feels more comfortable listening to it at home, which is totally fine. And I will follow the guidelines that were given from the community. So they already changed the things you don't need to sign in when you come in, so just exercise normal caution.
Okay, so torahchai.net. C-H-A-I.
Yes,
okay,
T-O-R-A-H-C-H-A, doesn't matter, torahchai.net, and that will get you to my website, and again, I try to get it uploaded. Now that we got a faster computer or faster modem or something, that now uploads very quickly instead of taking 10 minutes of making me crazy. Okay, so hopefully everybody had a wonderful Purim. It was great, again, to have a break, and you know, the Jewish people are known for their optimism. And Jewish women in particular are known for their ability to maintain hopefulness, not delusion, but hopefulness in times of challenge and when things are dark and unclear. And that's, I think we all have an opportunity to practice that. And while we have to stay abreast of what's going on, obsessing about it is actually not good for our health, honestly. We need to be focused on doing other things. It's very hard, it's very distracting, and it's very compelling, especially with the news reports. Constantly we're getting information from around the world every moment, and you can start to have difficulty breathing, not because you have the coronavirus, but because you're going to have out of the anxiety and having a panic attack, honestly. So, but we need to be careful. This week, so everybody take a deep breath, but hold it just like in front of, don't breathe out on anybody, just hold it in. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
You can breathe it in. This week is a special Shabbos. It's called Shabbat Parah. which is the Shabbos of the cow. And it sounds a little bit like the Chinese New Year, the year of the cow. So this is Shabbat Parah. It is the Shabbos of where we are going to have a special Torah reading, and we're going to go, jump forward, and we're going to read from Parsha Chukat. Parsha Chukat, which we'll be reading from in the summer, but it has to do with the red heifer. It has to do with the red heifer. Now, I just want to tell everybody, we're going to be talking about death, but we're not entertaining any comments about coronavirus, okay? That we're talking about death from a different perspective, and we're talking about life and death, and really, this fits in so perfectly. I had made a note on my calendar to have this particular conversation, like, in September, and put for, like, do this. So this comes from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks and his conversation about the Para Aduma, the red heifer. We're going to talk about that since it's the red heifer Shabbos. He gave it in the summer when we were actually, this past summer, when we were on Parsha Chukat, and we had already passed it when I saw it, so that's why I made a note, oh, talk about this when we come to Shabbat Para, because we revisit the Para Aduma now. So the first question is why? What are we doing with the Shabbat Para? So we're going to be on page 839. We're not going to actually be so much in the text, but that's where it is. Page 839, this is actually in the book of Bamidbar, Parsha Chukat, chapter 19. The Para Aduma ritual has a completely red heifer that's never had a yoke on it, that is completely red with no other color hairs on it at all, that is slaughtered and burned and combined with hyssop and cedar wood and a crimson thread, and then it's going to be all mixed together and mixed with living waters. And this mixture then would be sprinkled on somebody who had come into contact with the dead. This was a purification process. And then in a very strange thing, that the person who prepared the mixture, that was a purification mixture, would themselves become impure. And then they would have to go through not the same process, but an additional process of waiting 7 days, immersing in a mikvah, and then they would be clean.
I don't mean to interrupt. Is that the origin of the red thread?
It isn't, but it's interesting that it shows up there, right? Mm-hmm. So it shows up also in the treatment for the person who has spoken Lashon Hara, or the person who has Tzaraat. Mm-hmm. So the red string is in there, but it's from a different thing, but it does get our attention. It's like, oh, the red string. So this red string is going to be burned. So this is going to be, it's going to be mixed in with this mixture of the hyssop and the cedar wood and the burned ashes from the red heifer. There is a current red heifer now that's existing, and farmers, ranchers are interested in breeding it because it's going to be worth a whole lot of money when the third temple is rebuilt, because the first thing that's going to have to happen is that everybody who comes to the rebuilt Beit HaMikdash, the rebuilt temple, is going to have to go through this purification process, because we've all come into contact with death. If you were in the room with somebody who passed away, if you were in a cemetery, all these places of contact with death, we don't currently have a ritual. So we are all in a state of spiritual tuma, of ritual impurity, because we've come into contact with death. So this is the prerequisite. So when this happens, we're going to need a lot of ash from this red heifer. So there is a red heifer in Texas being raised by non-Jews, as far as I know. Its name is Geula, which means redemption. So it is a redemption heifer. Saw a sweet picture of its little red face, and it's there. So it's with us. So God willing, we'll have opportunity to use that. Now, the red heifer, this Para Aduma, and why we're doing it now, is that before the Jewish people could eat the Korban Pesach, before they could eat the Passover sacrifice, everyone had to be in a state of ritual purity. Each year when they would come to Jerusalem, anybody who wasn't had to go through the process of the Para Aduma, and they would have to be sprinkled with this water. We don't have the temple, and we don't even have the Passover offering. However, we do have Passover. That's all you have to do is go into King Soopers, and nobody has cleaned out those shelves. They're cleaning out the toilet paper shelves, but nobody's touching the matzah yet. So maybe you can use that in a pinch. So everyone's got that. So we're getting ready for Pesach, and because we're getting ready for Pesach, we're going through I won't say going through the motions, but we're going through the steps that the Jewish people would be going through to get ready for the Korban Pesach, to get ready for the Passover sacrifice that is to be offered on the Erev Passover afternoon before when we have the Seder. So we're going to read that portion in preparation for Pesach. So as we get closer and closer to Pesach, we start reading these different portions that then create special Shabbases, because now we are done with last week was Shabbat Zachor, and we got ready for Purim, and now we're done with the Hamantashen and ready to start thinking about Pesach. So we're moving into this Shabbat Para, reading about the red heifer in addition to the regular Torah reading, which is Parsha Ki Tisa. It's a little interesting because Parsha Ki Tisa is the accounting of the Jewish people worshiping the golden calf. So we've got kind of a cow theme going on. Parsha Ki Tisa with the golden calf does not always coincide with Shabbat Para. So it's not always an overlay, because depending on the calendar, it could be another Parsha. But this week, this year, it is a double cow Parsha. So we've got the golden calf, which was obviously a place of taking us to a very bad place of disconnection from Hashem. And then we also have the Para Aduma, which was to restore people's spiritual purity. So we have to ask the question, what is it doing? So Rabbi Sacks just develops a beautiful idea, and some of it we have touched on previously, but we're going to talk about it, I think, in a new way, which is that the human being is such a complex thing. We're a complex entity. Our brains are complicated. Freud was the first person who kind of looked at all the different psychological aspects of people in a deep way and tried to identify all the different things that are going on in people's minds and to identify it. So he identifies and looks at the brain in certain parts of it. So we know that there is the inner part of us. Some people call it the reptilian brain, the amygdala, which is responsible for all of our just kind of instant responses. You know, if you see, God forbid, your child running into the street with a car coming, you don't stop to think about anything. It's the non-thinking part of our brain. It's where we go when we get angry, and people like, I wasn't thinking, they're right when they say that. You weren't thinking, you were responding to the amygdala, which is this kind of flight or fight response. Very rapid, it is instinctive. It is not about thinking. The prefrontal cortex that's the part that's our analysis and thinking. That's where we ponder ideas. That's where we have our rational mind. We would like to think that we are always functioning in our rational mind. However, studies show that for the most part, we are functioning in our amygdala, and then we use our rational mind to rationalize why we are doing what we're doing that we already kind of instinctively decided to do for whatever reason. It could be, you know, why I grab that piece of candy when I'm on a diet. I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's Purim, it's Shushan Purim, it's, you know, that life is stressful, it's the elections, whatever it is. We come up with a rational idea that justifies the instinctive response that we have that we're not thinking. So we have these not thinking and thinking parts of our mind. Carol, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. So hold that piece. Then it says that the human being is also very strange in that we have what in Judaism we call a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara, but what Freud called a death wish and a life wish. We have a desire to protect ourselves and to survive, and we also have a bizarre desire to be destructive. And we see this get played out. If you thought about it rationally, nobody could really do anything destructive because it doesn't make any sense. So why do people do things that are a little bit of that thrill? Like, what is the thrill? It's really considered a miniature version of the death wish. So it's a death wish, but I'll wear a helmet maybe. But there's still something about living, when people talk about living on the edge and doing things, there is a little bit of a touch with death that seems to be just the nature of how people are. Now, individuals are on a continuum. people who are mothers or caretakers of children tend to be not so much on that level. They're into like protection, like of survival, like don't do that, that's dangerous. So, you know, kids, again, a generalization, kids will often say, daddy's more fun because he lets us do fun things. Mommy's always worried that we're going to get hurt. Okay, so that is like, what is that? It says that there is this desire to touch death. So what happens when we actually do touch death? So what happens if there really is death? There is something that happens that's not rational. It is not rational. There's something about when we touch death that it can have the potential to strengthen the death wish piece in us. Now you think, well, that's really irrational. You'd think if you've touched death that you would go the other way and want to be on the life-affirming. So it's not actually what happens. Now we're not going to talk about all the issues, but they've shown that when there is a suicide, like in a high school, that the likelihood of other high school students committing suicide increases, even people who didn't know them. There's something about just hearing about it that touches a chord that doesn't. You think, are you kidding me? You would be thinking like, well, I wouldn't want to do that. Now, pre-existing conditions, all these other things, maybe yes, but people are kind of living in an equilibrium, a homeostasis of their psychological well-being, and things can get tipped and put you on the other side. It says, coming into contact with death can have the potential of putting us on the other side, on the side of death. And that's the spiritual impurity. It's like you're in the death side. It's not that there's anything wrong with death. It happens to everybody. But it kind of triggers this death thinking. And that's not really thinking, it's an irrational thing. It is a primordial thing. But it taps into that. So the ritual for the Para Aduma, interestingly, is not a rational thing. It's designed to bypass the rational and go straight to the primitive, primordial, instinctive side of ourselves that governs so many of our actions. People, for example, again going back to the suicide, because that's the only thing I can think of exactly, is that when people do not sit down and evaluate their life and think, well, should I commit suicide, or do I see that this person who did this has plunged their family and friends into tremendous pain and suffering, I would be an idiot to do that. No, they're not thinking. People are not thinking. They are just reacting. It says this now, if somebody is not so emotionally stable, they might go off the deep end more quickly. But people who seem to have been okay, seem to have been being the operative word, can tip. The Para Aduma is the process, the not rational process, bypassing the rational to get to a core response that's in the human psyche. Consequently, it is an irrational thing, because if you think about it, You can't have a rational antidote to an irrational problem. I haven't seen all this other studies about this, but they're talking about when a child is upset or having a tantrum, and a parent says to a child, calm down, use your words, that's putting grease on the fire. If the child was in the mode to be able to think and use their words, they would be. And telling them to do that negates the experience that they're having. Now, this doesn't mean that you just like let them go and, you know, run crazy around the house and destroy everything. But one needs to come into a place of their irrational place to meet them there to help bring them out, and not go into a place of telling them, use your prefrontal cortex. I know you are engaged in your amygdala, but let's go to your prefrontal cortex.
It's like preschool schoolers now to do things like hug themselves.
It's called havening.
Yeah, they're I don't know, they're like five or six little different.
It's to do something physical to get, and it's not rational. This is not, well, let's talk about what you're experiencing. The talking is for later. They are not in a place of talking. And the Torah says, do not confront a person in their time of anger or their time of grief. Meaning, don't talk to somebody rationally when they are in their irrational mode. It doesn't work. This is the Para Aduma is like, this is a gift to us from Hashem, because nobody would come up with this. This doesn't make any sense. It says that King Solomon, the wisest man, said, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. All the other mitzvahs, you can come up with it, even if it's not the reason, you can come up with a reason or an explanation. This makes no sense. It says, precisely, that's why it works. Susan.
Is it like a placebo
effect? I hear what you're saying.
Addresses something rational?
It's possible that placebo effect works in this way as well. But this isn't considered a placebo effect. It's considered that it really does something, that it is able to get in and get to a deeper place than the rational mind. It's like you're fighting the problem with the wrong solution. It's never going to be the answer. So it's interesting that this, and it's from the Parsha, it's called Chukat. This is the reason it's called Parshat Chukat, it says, Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the decree of the Torah, is to do this ceremony. But the word chukat comes from the word to engrave, to go deep into something. So it's what Rabbi Sacks offers is that the very thing that it is what it allows it to do. It goes in deep into a place that's not the prefrontal cortex. It bypasses that. We have other things that bypass the prefrontal cortex that are the things that are physical. Music, for example, bypasses. People have a feeling from music. It's not a rational. The reason I like this music is I really appreciate chords that progress, you know, that go from, I don't even know what the music is. I don't know anything about it. So how is it that I can have a reaction to it? It's not a placebo. It's that it's going to a part of my brain that is resonating with a part that is not my rational mind. It says that's the trick. Death, because we have this little affinity with it in some bizarre way. It's like, why do people do anything that is self-destructive? Why does anybody do anything that's self-destructive? It's like, that's not rational. It's like, right, because that's a part of us that exists. Patricia.
So I get what you're saying with regard to the Parsha, but if you were confronted with a child that was experiencing this connection with a classmate's suicide, so how would you confront them irrational? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, you have to. So having a talk with them, a rational conversation with them, is probably not going to work. I don't know what would work. I don't know. But I'm guessing, this is me guessing right now off the top of my head, I'm guessing that what has to work is some other interventionist kind of therapy treatment or something that is not rational, because it never makes sense to, there's no rational reason to ever kill yourself. So having that conversation is clearly not the place to go, that there has to be something else where a person is touched in a different way that goes to a different part of their mind, because otherwise it's not going to work. Because parents talk about that. How many times we tell our kid we love them, we support them, we'll do anything for them.
I apologize.
Nobody ever said, oh, thank you, Mom. Now I'm good. They don't, because we keep thinking, how can you possibly do that? And so we're like, what are they thinking? It's like, they're not thinking. They're in another place. Now, this is not talking about people who have, you know, other, you know, chemical imbalances and clinical depression or things like that. I'm talking about, if you could say such a thing, garden variety things like this. But it is this part of the human mind that does have this morbid connection to death. And it's not just people who are, you know, there's some people who are way off the scale who are, you know, what's it called? People who like have like really like to engage with death. I forget what it's called. Necrophilia.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, is that what it's called? Necrophilia. People who have like a love of death. So we think those people are crazy. Those people are crazy. But they're just on the continuum. Like, that's not healthy. But all of us have it. Like, all of us have a little bit of kleptomania. All of us have a little bit of being liars. All of us have a little bit of being killers. All of us have like a little bit of all this stuff. We cannot say that has nothing to do with me whatsoever. It's like, no, I have it, but it's almost like exposure. So we're talking about when you have exposure to something. This isn't like when you yourself died, obviously, God forbid, because that's a different story. But when you come into close contact with it, it's almost like there's a contagion there. There's something that you have been impacted. Now, it's not about if you heard about it. It's about if you were in direct contact with it. Then you would have to go through this process. And specifically, you could say, well, why didn't they have to do that before they had celebrate any holiday? How about before I celebrate Hanukkah? Do I also have to do Parah Adumah? Can I be in a ritual state of impurity there? It's like, yeah, but not for Pesach, because Pesach is the birth of the Jewish people. That's when we are making a clean break with Egypt, with bondage, and the whole Egyptian mentality is about death. Those pyramids that they built, it's all about death. It's all about how the Pharaoh or whoever was, that they were assigned for that for their entire lives. As soon as the Pharaoh came into power, he started building having his pyramid, his tomb built to accompany him to the next world. The whole life was about death, which is a kind of an oxymoron, as opposed to Jewish life, which is all about Jews, all about Jews, obviously, all about life. And it's also all about Jews. It's also about Jews and everybody else. So the priests of Egypt were death priests. That's what their names were, like death priests. Our Kohanim, because of this, our Kohanim cannot come into contact with death. Okay, so a Kohen cannot even go into a cemetery they have to stay on the road. They can't walk onto the grass where the tombstones are, where the burial is. They can't be under a tree that grows on the grass of where the cemetery, of where the plot is. They must stay away from death because they have to be focused on life affirming. That's the nature of our Kohanim. And it's the nature of the Jewish people. So while we don't go to that extent, we do as much as we can. And before we celebrate Pesach, which again is like going into the delivery room. So just as you would take precautions, it's like people have germs or whatever, just even on a regular basis. But if you go into a NIC unit, if you're going into a neonatal, or if you go to visit a first-time mother with her baby, it's like, wash your hands, use Purell, you know, put on a whatever. By the third kid, you know, they're like, here, you know, here, take the kid. It's like, you know, they're going to survive. But there is a lot of concern about how we come into this new relationship, this time of complete renewal, of as if we are babies being born and we need to be in our most life-affirming state of mind, because we are rejecting everything that has to do with Egypt, with bondage, and with death. So everybody had to have gone through. If you came into contact with a dead body, which kind of triggers the death thing, you had to go through the Parah Adumah before you offered your Korban Pesach. And specifically at that, not at Rosh Hashanah, not at Yom Kippur, not at Hanukkah, none of those other things. But Pesach, yes, because of what it signifies. Patricia, you look like you have a question for me. Okay. So it's, I think, very interesting to think about, you know, what, you know, so, and we said, just so people who came in later, that we're not talking about the coronavirus. I'm only going to talk this. But yeah, we're here to not talk about it. But I was emailing with somebody about arranging a time to talk, and she lives in New York, and things have been very crazy with postponing things. And she said, you know, it's really crazy. I said, I know. It makes me just want to eat carbohydrates. Because it's kind of like, you know, yeah. It's like, why should I worry? It's like, but this is self-destructive, because then I got on the scale this morning, and I've gone up 5 pounds. So, great. Baruch Hashem, I don't have the virus at this point, but so I put on 5 pounds. Well, that's also self-destructive because I have elevated blood sugar. So what am I doing? So why would I do this? Like, well, you know, I might as well. So there is a little bit of like, well, I might as well, you know, I might as well. And it's an excuse to kind of go crazy. I might as well, because this is looming, like I'm touching, the death is around me, so like why bother with all these other things? Like why bother? So that's a very dangerous place to go. Now I'm not saying that eating too many humantashen is exactly life's greatest disaster, but it could be. It could be. It's like, why do that? So this morning was like I started my calendar over. Day one, let's, between now and Pesach, let's just think here, that because there are other threats around and there is like all this talk does not mean that we abandon our desire for life and for long life. We need to keep our eyes on the prize. This is what I think was, when we think about it again, we keep always going back to it because it's so amazing. The Jewish women being committed to having children in Egypt, why did they not throw up their hands and think, why would we do this? I'm going to seriously pursue this and go through pregnancy and labor and delivery with the threat of death, and my kid's going to get thrown into the river. It's like, that's not rational.
It's amuna.
It's right, yeah. So we had a whole talk before you came in about the difference between irrational and irrational. Mm-hmm. So now we're coming to a place that we're talking about super rational. That it's not that it's irrational. The Para Aduma is not irrational. It's God's rational mind saying, enter into my domain. Enter into the place where I think, which is how Miriam thought, which is how the Jewish women thought in Egypt. To a male rational, I will say a masculine rational mind, it makes no sense to have children under these conditions. To the woman's spiritual mind connected to God, it made all the sense in the world, even though you couldn't explain it. It is not explainable. It says, not everything that is worthwhile is explainable. The Western mind wants to have everything be rational. Like if you can't explain it and prove it and give me evidence for it and do this, it's not worthy of consideration. It's like, there's a whole other world out there that does not fit any of those criteria. And that's the world we're entering. The Exodus from Egypt also didn't really make any sense. It had never happened before in Egyptian history. There was never any people that just got up and went out. It didn't happen. First of all, because guess where they would end up? In the desert and die there. So where would you be? As the Jewish people constantly did start thinking, well, wait a minute. Why did we come, and they said to Moses, why did we come out to the desert to die? We could have died and at least had some, you know, comfort in Egypt. That's actually a pretty rational, that's rational. It's irrational to say, oh no, don't worry, just pick up everything and leave Egypt and God will take care of you. It's like, we're entering into the world of Emunah, we're entering into this divine dimension, and it's not human rationality. So while we would like to dismiss it and say it's totally irrational, it's not totally irrational, it's just beyond our rational ability. It exists in a different dimension. You know, just think about, you know, again, speaking about germs, think about before they discovered germs, who would think that washing your hands could do anything? It's like, what was that? I don't see any germs. Believing in germs is actually kind of irrational. I've never seen one germ in my entire life. I've never seen one, not one. But I believe in them. Okay, so I trust it. It's like that when they were first discovered, people thought it was crazy. That's crazy. There's no such thing. There's no such thing. What are you talking about? So we of all people should realize that there is a whole lot going on inside of our own minds, the way our own psyche is designed, the way the world works, that is beyond our comprehension. And to be able to humbly say, I don't get it. I had a talk earlier this week with somebody who was saying, you know, they said, I'm just too rational. And I want to say, it's like, no, you're not. You know, you've decided your position and now you're making up stories to go with your position, but you're not that rational. Nobody is. That's not where we really function. Patricia.
So this must be also where the laws, not the Mishpatim, but that you can't understand.
Like, these are the chukim, the ones that you can't understand.
That's where all of these come from, that we don't understand.
We don't understand. We do not understand it. It says,
but
we don't understand.
Reasons that are
God's reasons.
Super rational.
They are super rational. They are God's, but they're not irrational. They are super rational. And so what Rabbi Sacks is suggesting is what's super rational. Now, this is kind of, again, you can get yourself kind of twisted up. It is rational to believe that it's irrational to use a rational explanation or approach for something that is irrational. Right?
Yeah.
Did you follow that?
I did.
Okay, so that's the amazing thing, is God is saying, no, there is a way to bypass this and to go to get there, and I'm going to give that to you, because if you're going to try to do, you know, these other things, that's not going to work. It's not going to work.
Can you repeat what you said?
Yeah.
It is rational to believe
that it is irrational to use a rational approach to address an irrational issue. And that's what we've got with the Parah Adumah, is this is a rational approach because we're given very specific. It's not a, you know, go do something. This is a very specific formula that defies explanation, that will help the person who is on a place of an irrational place be restored to a normal, and I'll call it homeostasis, because we're all always struggling with this. It's irrational to go and hoard toilet paper when there is a virus that is respiratory, honestly. I was like, hello, it should be Kleenex. So, okay, we're not talking about it. We're not talking about it.
I just wanted to say something that somebody said. That's
no.
Funny.
Yes.
No.
But thank you. You can tell me afterwards. Okay. I'll be happy to hear it. Susan.
I missed something, but timing-wise, is this right after coming out of Egypt? Is that the need for purification?
No. The Parah Adumah was for future contact with the death before they would offer the Passover sacrifice each year, or anytime somebody came into contact with death. This was while they were in the desert. While they were in the desert. So before they left Egypt, people were in a place, so they had to do some other things that helped them transition. So the very first Korban Pesach, the first Passover sacrifice, so that's a very good question. The first Passover sacrifice was unique in that they had the first Seder while they were still in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And so they had to enter a place, talk about really irrational. Maybe that was his own irrationality. While you're in Egypt, you're going to sacrifice the god of the Egyptians in full view to kind of taunt them and gain your emunah on your faith in God. You're going to put the blood on your door. You're going to get dressed and be ready to go. And you're going to celebrate the fact that you are being liberated while you're still in Egypt. Now, if I don't know, I think that trumps even the red heifer, you know, as far as that's irrational. You're celebrating something that hasn't even happened yet, and you're dressed and ready to go, and you're not even leaving until the next morning. But you're going to go through all these motions, and those motions are actually going to allow you to leave. Because if you can't get there in your mind, you can't get there. If you can't get there in your mind, you can't get there. The Parah Adumah was able to help people get to a place in their mind that was not accessible through a conversation. There were no speeches at the Seder in Egypt. They didn't say, and now in the future, you're going to really believe in God and blah, 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 and he's going to be here. It's like all things to do. You take this animal, you butcher it, you roast it, you eat it. It was all experiential. And maybe, Patricia, that's the answer to what you're asking about the suicide issue, is it may be that the therapy for that has to be experiential and something physical that goes into that bypasses the thinking part. I just read that they've done some amazing research about the power of smell and memory, and how they're dealing with post-traumatic stress through rewiring the memory with smell, and using smell even at night to remember things of which nostril goes to this side of the brain, this nostril to the other, all this. I mean, we don't even know. This whole little thing on top of our necks here is a mystery beyond our comprehension. We don't really know. So it is such a gift to be given a chok, even though those are the mitzvot that people are the most derisive of. I always liked, I always appreciated this, that in Hebrew, it's a chok, and if you say that in Spanish with a J, it would be pronounced chok, but it's a joke. And it's like, it says that it's the mitzvot that are a joke to other people. They're the ones that people are most, ugh, what's that? Kashrut, not mixing milk and meat, honestly, that's a chok. We don't know why. We can kind of create a little scenario around it, but it's a chok. I see people walking around in perfectly good health mixing milk and meat. They're just, they're lovely people. They are physically healthy. They seem to be good citizens. So, and I'm going to say, oh, I can't do that. It's like, why not? It's like, it's a chok. I said, well, you can come up with the guy, like, oh, the mother, you know, taking the baby and cooking it in its mother's milk is cruel and all those other things. Like, if I was that much of an animal lover, I wouldn't have killed the baby in the first place. You know, so like, why do I care about it after it's dead, cooking it in its mother's milk? That doesn't make any sense. So it's a chok also. Not wearing linen and wool. Not crossbreeding plants and animals. You can't do that. It's also chok. It's like, look how much it works. You know, you like can improve species. You get food where it's been mixed to things, like it's better, it lasts longer on the shelf, it's, you know, transports better, it stays nicer, you know. It's like, why can't I do that? It's like, can't
so
do it.
Would GMOs be against Orthodox law?
So it's interesting. We can't do it, but we can benefit from it.
Okay.
So you can eat it, but you can't do it. You cannot do it. You cannot cross species. You cannot do that with plants or animals. It's like, you're messing with creation. It's like, but I'm making it better. It's like, okay, maybe, maybe not. But Torah says, no, you cannot do that. People go and they get their garments checked to make sure there's no linen wool together. Otherwise, it has to be cut out and something else put in. There are people, we have a friend that's like their business. It's called a shotness checker. And you go and you are trained to identify the fibers. And you can't say, oh, well, I know this. There's no shotness in here. It's like, how do you know? It has to be checked. It's like, are you serious? And then I'm going to have to like butcher up my suit because it has like a linen placket under the lapel. It's like, yep. It's like, that's crazy. So it says, as soon as somebody says, that's crazy, you're like, that would be a hoax. That would be the joke. That would be the thing that is doing something to us that we don't even know what it's doing. I can't explain it, but it's doing something to us. And we don't know what it is. But it's somehow rewiring us. So I'm going to offer this. Rabbi Sacks did not say this. So I'm not going to put words into his mouth. But you know, many of our enemies have taunted us with that we love life and that they love death. I mean, they've said that. We haven't said you love death, we love life. They've said to us, we love death and you love life, which is a bizarre thing. But it makes me wonder. Even though we don't have the Para Aduma right now, we did for many centuries. We did for the...
They came up with, there were some that they were like breeding at one point.
We actually mentioned at the beginning of the class, there's one in Texas. His name is Geula, or her name is Geula. It's a woman. It's a girl, not woman. It's a girl cow, a heifer.
It's a girl cow.
It has to be a female. Her name is Geula. She's very cute. What was I saying?
Even though we don't have it.
Oh, even though we don't have, thank you. Thank you, Tova. Even though we don't have it, the Jewish psyche has been impacted by those centuries when we did have it. And it has, I think, has put us on the tilted toward life more than death, more than other people. And you think about it. Jewish people, yes, there are some people who did work in the mines and have done dangerous jobs, but a Jewish person given the preference, earn money, less money working in a store, selling shmatas, or make more money working in a mine and risk your life, is going to choose less money with the shmatas. What about doctors?
But you said you're not supposed to be around death. How many Jewish doctors are...
If they're a Kohen, they cannot be in the presence of a dead body.
So a Kohen technically shouldn't become a doctor?
He can, he just can't be around a dead body. There are plenty of Kohanim that are doctors, but they can't be around a dead body. In Israel, they have hospitals that are halachically designed so that there is a revolving door between the patient's rooms and the hallway so that there's never an opening, because as soon as you open the door, that becomes part of the thing. You've seen here when there's a funeral here at BMH, and if the casket is in the building, there'll be a sign on the door that says Kohanim. Mm-hmm. There's a casket in the building. Don't come in.
I can't remember where in Europe, but it was Krakow or Prague, where they're not really sure where the border of the cemetery is. And if you go around outside the alleyway, there's a sign that says Kohen. Beware, we're not... We think this is the edge of the cemetery, but we don't know for sure.
So we don't know. So the Kohanim represent really our ideal state, which is death is a death is a little bit of a problem for us, because when we encounter death, it makes us, it rattles us about life. Death is that's the challenge of death, is it rattles those who are alive. The Jewish people are pretty death-avoidant people. And even when you talk about health, Jews, as a demographic group, go to the doctor more frequently than any other demographic group, because we're all about, there's something wrong with me. I think that's one of the reasons why Israel is handling this. And again, we're not talking about coronavirus. Israel is like all over doing everything possible to control the spread of this, because we are so healthy. It said Magen David Adom had a 700% increase in just the calls of people who are nervous and worried. So Jews are concerned about their health. I remember one time sharing this with a person about, you know, coming out west. You know, my family came out here, and the Jews tended to be in the stores. They would sell the supplies to the miners. They would sell the shmatas. They would sell whatever, but they weren't going into the mines. And someone said, well, don't you think that's a little, what's the word they used?
Elitist.
Elitist, like mean, like you let other people do it. It's like, no one forced those other people to do it. It's not that the Jews shoved the people into the mines. Everyone made their own choice of what they wanted to do.
And they needed supplies.
As a group, and you need supplies. And how my family got out here, it's like there was like the Army Depot. They sold clothing. It's like, but we're not doing the dangerous things. Even look at the sports. People joke. The sports that Jews play are the safest sports, where you have the least likely chance of having a concussion and brain damage.
Tennis.
And yeah, tennis is good.
Baseball.
Swimming is good. Baseball is pretty good. It's like, not so much on the football. Okay, now you could say soccer and all these other things are like, they get into it, but that's like more of a European thing. But we're very careful about our health. And I think that over the centuries, it has become almost a cultural thing. We don't say, well, you know, I read Parshat Chukat, and I know that we try to stay as far away from death as possible. I'm trying to keep my equilibrium. The Jewish people are tilted towards life, but that could be easily undone. It could easily be undone. So this is something that we're trying to focus on, and I think that given what's going on now, that we need to be focused on life and do things that are life-affirming and not use the current situation to kind of, you know, eat bags of chips like I did yesterday and just do all these, oh yeah, I'll have this chocolate and that chocolate. It's all sitting on my counter. It's like, don't do that. Don't go into the self-destructive, because there's this thing, like we don't even understand the psychology of what's going on with us. We are responding at a non-rational place in our brain is making us act the way we do. So we're getting ready for Pesach, and we should all focus on the life-affirming things that have to do with Pesach. Redemption, the Jewish people, staying healthy, yes, but spending our time finding out what we need to know in order to be careful, in order to be realistic, because there is a plenty much of an idea that we have of hishtadlut, which is we have to put in reasonable effort. And everybody needs to decide what that reasonable effort is for them. And that can be in everything. That could be from how much time you spend working. That's hishtadlut too. You could say, I have total emuna, Hashem is taking care of me. It's like, yes, and you need to go get a job. But how many hours should I work? How much time should I be away from, you know, my family? All those things are decisions of people's individual hishtadlus. And the same thing when it comes to health. Like, a person should work out. Well, how many hours should you spend in the gym? Should you spend 7 hours in the gym working out? Probably not. Should you spend 7 seconds in the gym? That's probably not enough. So there is something that everybody needs to identify what it is that they need to do. But primarily, and through our conversation, because when we're talking about this and telling the jokes part, that's fine. That's funny. That actually helps. The humor, the positive thinking, and focusing on even the good stories within. So I'll share one that I just saw, that there was a bat mitzvah in New York, and that it had to be canceled. It was for the Shabbos, but the food is already prepared. They boxed it up, and they had it delivered to needy families. And so then there was like all of these things. So somebody posted that, and so other newspapers, non-Jewish places, said, like, can we run an article on this? This is so beautiful. And it had the people who received the packages saying, thank you so much. So that they turned the celebration into a different kind of celebration. Instead of all these well-fed guests eating all this lovely food, they gave the food to people who don't have. And that was her bat mitzvah. That kind of story is an inspiring story to tell. Even though we are drawn, I am drawn to the how many people died in 24 hours in Italy, and like, oh my God, and like, you know, this and this is like, it sucks us in. That does nothing to help us cope. Absolutely nothing. I mean, we can feel grateful that we're not there, but that's not really such a great thing. But the positive attitude, the positive speech, because all these things that we're recounting and keep talking and talking and talking about, it's going into our brains. Our brain is recording this. It's like we're making it worse for ourselves by talking about it incessantly. Because we just keep experiencing the bad news. Like, don't do that to yourself. Do not do it. Find out what you need to know to be reasonable and to take precautions that are appropriate for your personal situation. And focus on Pesach, and maybe now, as much as I've been avoiding the Passover aisle, maybe now is like a good time to actually, Dafka, go down the Passover aisle and say, Passover is coming. And being focused only on, on one hand, we have to be focused on what's going on right now. On the other hand, we have to also keep the bigger picture in mind. We have to focus on tomorrow, the next day, next year, etc. Tremendous uncertainty. We don't know what it is, but being hopeful about what it's going to be is essential. The Parsha Aduma for this week should be like if we could go through and kind of sprinkle ourselves with this water that has the Parsha Aduma in it. Maybe it would help us restore our balance and our minds to a place where we can function in a more healthy and productive way.
You said that Jews don't go into mines and things. My grandpa was a miner, 49er, in Cripple Creek. They had a mine with three veins. He worked it during the day, and at night he was a saloon keeper.
Wow. That's amazing. And there were a lot of Jews. So when I said that, I did not mean that exclusively. I meant that the Jews, for sure, there were. As a general rule, Jewish people tend to like careers that are above ground, with fresh air,
there you go,
and have the least risk possible. Obviously, people have done all sorts of things out of need, or they got caught up in whatever. But as a general cultural thing, there were Jews who were boxers too. But it's like that's not our general thing. We'd mostly like, how can we stay safe? And
The Israelis do smoke like chimneys.
Yeah, it's true. They do, but that's a whole different conversation. But I'll tell you, that's a different conversation. So that's addictions, as the other things. But in general, the more we can surround ourselves with stories, positive talk, having a long-term perspective, keeping things balanced, we will do ourselves the best good. It says our immune system is a very complicated system. Getting enough sleep. I'm like, oh my gosh, staying up late to read the Facebook feed about everything that's happening, I'm doing myself harm by staying up and looking at that and bombarding myself and not going to sleep early, being well-rested, well-nourished, positive, davening, praying, thinking about these things. It's like doing what you can to strengthen yourself is probably our best course of action. God willing, this will all pass in good time with everyone should stay well, and everyone should have a good Shabbos. I will keep you posted if we make any changes. But again, for those who came in late, what we're going to do, anybody who doesn't feel comfortable coming to class personally, I will not take it personally, and I'm recording the classes, and they will be uploaded for everybody to enjoy at their leisure. And I hope that we only see each other for simchas and in good health, and everybody have a wonderful Shabbos. Take care. The trip is scheduled for